the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
For me, footwork has been something that's got me out of trouble on more than one occasion on and off the pitch, so I'll go with that one.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, loads to talk about on Monday Night Rugby this evening. Great to have you with us. Munster beat Connacht at Thomond Park on Saturday. Leinster winners at home to the Scarlets on Friday. Ulster 4 bonus point wins from 4 against the Lions. Next weekend, Ulster play Connacht at the Aviva Stadium. Leinster away to Glasgow. Munster away to Ospreys. And November internationals starting to come very much into focus. Happy to say Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times is with us. Hi, Gerry.
How you doing, Joe?
And we have the former Leinster, Scotland and Ulster coach, of course, as well, Matt Williams. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Joe.
So, eventful couple of days, I think, Gerry, we can say. Munster 20, Connacht 18 at Thomond. An eventful few minutes there for Joey Carberry. Kick blocked down, Jack Carty pounces, game going the way of Connacht, and then he rebounds to kick the winning conversion.
Yeah, he showed nerves of steel, and fairness to the lad, put it completely behind him. I have a tendency just to watch the kicker when I'm live at a game, Joe, because you actually don't have to watch the ball. You can just watch the kicker and you can tell from their body language whether they've hit it well or not. And he kind of ran through the ball very confidently to pick up the tee. He knew it was going straight between the posts. Whatever about Joey's running game, he might be lacking a bit of confidence. I think at the moment, a bit of a gap opened up at one point in second half. In times past, I think he might have gone for quicker. Hopefully that's all he needs, just one clean break or score a try and he'll get that old confidence back. But his goal kicking has been exceptional since he's come back. And yeah, he showed very good nerves there, good mental strength to overcome what must have been a pretty horrific moment for him. Regathering with his teammates underneath the post as Jack Carty's about to put the conversion over the bar to put Connacht in front.
Yeah, what about the game on the whole, Matt?
Wasn't a great spectacle, was it? I think I had a bit of Jackman say, I wonder what the backs were doing there in commentary a number of times. Zubo hardly saw the ball. But I've got to say, Connacht Munster games tend to go like that. You've got to give Connacht a lot of credit. They played really well. They took it to Munster. And look, I think the better team lost. You don't want to dwell on these things, but it was an appalling referee decision. How the TMO and the referee could not see Ty Burn in front of the kick, Scanlon, who kicked the ball, crossfield kick. He was 2 metres in front. And that shouldn't have been a try just before half-time, crucial time.
Yeah. Matt, I'm just going to jump in because I think we can definitely do better on your lines front. So we'll just take a very quick pause and get you sorted and we'll revisit that point in just 1 second. Apologies. Now, apologies for that. We are back up and running. So we have Gerry Thornley with us. And Matt Williams, we're thinking you're on a better line. You're there?
I am. Good man. That's a bit better on the phone.
Much better. So look, sorry, once more with feeling, the game as a whole, what did you make of it?
It was a bit of a fizzer in my book. Joe, I know Connacht Munster games can get very very turgid. You know, there's a lot of passion there, as always, a little brother, big brother type scenario, and you've got to give Connacht a lot of credit. I thought they were a better team on the night, but it certainly wasn't a spectacle. The Munster were very inaccurate, and their quality backline that they have just didn't see enough ball. I thought they could have put Connacht under a lot more pressure if they had to move the ball a bit more. But to be fair to Connacht, they kept Munster in a box. But I think the game was defined by the errors from the officials awarding a try that definitely wasn't a try to Munster there in the dying moments of the first half, which put a huge spin on the game in Munster's favour. That should have been a penalty to Connacht for offside. Todd Byrne was well in front of Scannell when he kicked the ball, and that he towed it through and went on to a try. How the officials missed it is beyond me, because it just stood out. As soon as you watch it, he's offside. And then they didn't review it. I also thought that the sin-binning Samianov was tough. It was definitely high when you watch it on the replay. But it could have been a penalty. So let's not argue about the sin-bin, but the refereeing error on the offside was certainly the defining moment of the game for mine. And not a great spectacle of the game, and the best team didn't win.
apart from that,
what I was really disappointed with is Munster have been playing really, really great rugby. got to give them a lot of credit. They played fantastic rugby. And the week before, the young team with a few old heads in it played some spectacular rugby. And I was hoping for a bit more, and I think everyone was. And it certainly didn't live up to that expectation.
Mm. Well, just to sign off on the Chris Clude decision point for a moment, Andy Friend, Jerry, was very frustrated afterwards. I suspect you were listening to him talk about the situation. So he was referencing the Tiernan O'Halloran flick, which led to a try, which was ultimately disallowed. And correctly, he acknowledged, but he said of the burn offside, by contrast, he said it just doesn't get looked at. It doesn't get poured over in the same manner as the O'Halloran flick. They get 7 points for it. They win by two. I'm frustrated and annoyed by that. And then he was asked if he feels it's a general situation where Connacht get a bit of a raw deal with referees. He said, I'll let others decide. We very rarely end up on the right side. If it's a 50-50, it very rarely goes our side. It is hard. So that was Andy Friend's take after the game, Jerry.
Yeah, very quickly, I would tend to agree with Matt on the some of Munster's back play. They hardly, I mean, Simon Zeebo may have watched the game from beside me in the stands after an early pass from Mike Haley in a counter. They hardly worked him into the game at all. Even that, if you actually go back and look, the build-up to that high hit by Sammy Arnold, which got the yellow card, it was the result, the product of some extraordinarily lateral back play by Munster, which was disappointing to see. Ironic that it ended up giving them a crucial one-man advantage for 10 minutes either side of the break, during which they got that controversial try. Yeah, those calls, I actually remember transcribing them because it was me who asked Andy Friend the question afterwards if there was an institutionalised bias that were against Connacht. And that's when he said it was just inexcusable. And the most valid point is that they did, the two officials, the TMO, Brian McNeice, and the referee, Chris Busby, did look at least three times and spend over a minute analysing the flick from Tiernan O'Halloran. They spent a minute and 40 seconds reviewing at least three times the double hit by Bundiaki and Sammy Arnold. And for some reason, if they did review, Brian McNeice did review it, it wasn't apparent. They didn't appear to review it. And that was even more clearly using the 10-metre line as a gauge. Rory Scanlon's kick is from the Munster side of the 10-metre line. Tyke Byrne is in front of the 10-metre line when Rory Scanlon connects with the ball. And the point being that they just didn't spend as much time in that. I don't know. Maybe it's a difficult one for a young referee to disallow a try in front of 16,000 Munster fans after they just cheered their team to the rafters. It's that bit more difficult. Maybe home advantage still comes into play. I don't know, but I remember interviewing Matt Williams a long time ago about this, ironically enough, and Matt said to me that there is an institutionalised racism against Connacht within Irish rugby and the IRFU. And he might tone down those comments now and maybe use a word like institutionalised bias, I don't know. But they, you know, they've been bleating about perceived injustice from officials going back decades. It's nothing particularly new here.
Do you want to come in on that, Matt?
Geez, Thornley's got some memory, hasn't he? Bring it in.
It's a hard quote to forget, Matt.
Throw me under the bus like that, though, Jerry. You're right. And look, I do. Andy Friend's an old, he's a mate of mine, and I employed Andy, gave him his first job. So I was really feeling for him. But you, over the years, Connacht never, ever get the bounce of the ball. It's, you just see it. You know, I think it's my 25th year watching Irish provincial rugby, and they just never get it. There's no doubt about it. And look, you've got that. It's definitely the home ground advantage. The referees around the world, not just last weekend, home teams win for a reason. Home teams get the percentage of penalties for a reason, because referees are human beings and they get influenced. And you know, I'm in France right now, I can tell you, you get a hometown referees are everywhere over here. They just don't give the away team the same advantage because they get influenced. And I think whether I don't believe it's a conscious thing, but I think it's definitely a real issue. And you only had to look at that game the other night. I mean, that was a shocking decision that didn't get reviewed. And it was just so obvious to everyone that there was an offside player in front of the kicker. First thing you look at on a review is the players that influenced the game after the kick behind the kicker. And it wasn't even looked at. But look, it's probably a bigger issue. I mean, I spoke to Jerry. I remember having long conversations with Jerry about that officiating is the greatest problem in the game worldwide. In the championship in Australia, that's just been completed, the international championship, three of the games were decided by officials, technical rulings of officials in the dying moments of the game that gave penalties. And that shouldn't be the case. The players' skills should be deciding games. It's a much broader issue than just the one we saw the other night, and it definitely did rob Connacht of a victory. but it is a much, much broader issue. Another really great rugby mind, I'm not going to say who it was, but guy I was talking to, because he didn't know I was going to quote him on national radio, he said to me, if the referees, they're just untouchable at the moment. Within world rugby, they are, they can't seem to get them to reform, to listen to a ways of change, you know, of trying two referees, of allowing the TMO to override the referee in a much more easy manner than it is at the moment. They're just untouchable. And they're making error after error after error, especially at scrum time. Especially at scrum time, we're seeing games being decided by scrum penalties. The referees are getting those penalties wrong. You know, I would say on the vast majority of the case, 70, 80% there, there's other factors in play. And that's influencing the outcome of the game. So it's a much broader problem in the game than just what we saw the other night. But it really brought it out. You know, the best team didn't win. And when we're saying that often, and referee decisions are deciding games, as we're seeing at the highest level of the game, the sport has a problem. And we do. And I just don't know what we can say. I've written about it. We've put it up. Everyone around the world is saying it. And we get nothing back from World Rugby. It's a huge issue.
Well, rumours unconfirmed, Andy Friend is planning a Razzy Erasmus-style video for during the week, so we'll look out for that. I would suspect he is massively frustrated, Friend, Jerry, because Connacht in so many ways, they're great to watch, high-tempo games, Bundiaki back from that Lions tour and looked in great shape, someone like Matt Hansen's a great find, and if you take it, say, from the Bulls' win a couple of weeks ago, I would have thought Friend was mapping out this route now to the November internationals and certainly wasn't banking on 0-2. That Dragons defeat last week was a big blow, and then to lose by 2 in the manner that they did at Thomond is deeply frustrating, because they have to get off to a good start, you feel, this season. They are under pressure to make the Champions Cup for a fifth year in a row given the current format, and already this season is starting to feel like momentum is against them.
Completely. I mean, the difference in that result means I think they're something like 11 points adrift of the other three Irish teams in the table, so they're already, you know, running up the hill backwards, as it were, trying to catch up with their three provincial rivals. The whole format of the competition has conspired much more heavily against them when you think they've got to play the top three teams in the table 6 times, and they're the only ones who have to do that. And yeah, they need to take everything that comes their way, so they need to beat somebody like the Dragons at home. And they have been fitful and inconsistent this season already. You think of that Bulls performance and then the way they came down. I thought that Dragons game, they should have been much further ahead at halftime. Caelan Blade is held up over the line by Jonah Holmes. Then Jack Cardy missed a kick. They could have easily been about 22-8 up at halftime instead of what they were. And then they just lost their way in the second half. And part of the performance against Munster was the response to that, because their pride was hurt. They were a wounded animal. They knew they had to front up. And by all accounts, their training had been excellent. There were a lot of meetings between the players. It was very intense training. They came in very focused. But they're a good little side. They really are. They're like, if you look at their launch plays, you look at that very first move of the match, and even their launch plays against the Dragons, they frequently get over the gain line from all their launch plays off scrums or lineouts. There's a lot of variety. Nice. When do you see a hooker peeling around a lineout and feeding a little scrum half on the charge like Caelan Blade on an out-in run to get over the gain line? There's a lot of variety. That first minute move to put Mac Hansen through, and you're right, he really does look a find. But they've just got to be more consistent, and they've got to command the basics a little bit better. If they take care of 2 restart receptions after their 2 tries in the second half, they win the match, and they didn't take care of them.
Matt, just to expand on your point, you were complimentary of Munster there thus far this season, and they were criticised a touch, even though they won the game against the Stormers, because it was so forward-oriented, and there's maybe an accusation of a lack of craft in there, and that's going to come back to bite them once again when they get to the latter stages of Europe. And to be fair to them, we are seeing players try things. Like, I think Dave Kilcoyne made a great break and gave the offload to John Ryan. I'm not so sure we were seeing those types of things a while ago. And you think, you know, Casey's lovely little reverse pass. So we are seeing bits and bobs. But you were complimentary a month ago. You like the shape of them so far this year?
I do, Joe. And I've sort of watched Munster the last few years, especially really since Stephen Larkham is running their attack. And at times, their attack works and their skills let them down. I think it was against Racing down at Thomond there a couple of years ago was a classic example. They had overlaps a number of times, but their individual skills didn't take advantage of what the system that Stephen Larkham has put in place has created. So they've got the system within them, but the individuals haven't been working to the level required within the system. And I've seen an improvement in that this year. I've certainly seen their skills step up, some great passing there in some of the early games. They're not the finished article, and they might win a trophy this year. They might still be a little bit behind, but I can definitely see progress. And I also like what their attitude is at times. Now, they sort of, you know, the elements were pretty rough there at Thomond the other night. Like, the night wasn't a night for running open, let's spin the ball rugby. But at times during the year, they have. And they've also got one other thing that I love, which is they've got some pressure in the squad now. They've got a lot of competition for places. They've got people stepping up and fighting the more established players, like Craig Casey's done, in a number of positions. And I think that is putting pressure within the group. And that drives the performance of the team. You can see it at Leinster. There is that much pressure at Leinster for positions in that starting team that they are working their hearts out, and that drives performance. So I can see Munster moving forward. I don't think they are the finished article. They certainly weren't. Have not been perfect, but I've seen glimpses of some real improvements this year.
Yeah, where are you in that front, Jerry?
Oh, wow. Munster are quite an enigma to me. I sometimes watch them think, yes, they're really developing something new. And then, you know, even when they win, they go back to the bludgeon, as it were, and go back to what their strengths are, the maul, the pick and jam. And they're very effective at it, and their pack is quite powerful. They tried to bludgeon Connacht, but Connacht actually stood up them quite well on Saturday night. And there didn't look to be a plan B. By way of variety, Jack O'Donoghue had the smarts to pop the ball to Dermot Barron rather than plunge for the line himself. And I think that caught Abraham Bapalii off guard a little bit, and that's how the try evolved. But you look at a player like Simon Zeebo and you see the impact he had in the first match, and you see his first run from that Mike Haley counter early on in the game, and then they hardly work him into the match. I wonder, you know, what they've got potentially the best attacking fullback in Irish rugby, and they're playing him on the left wing and they're hardly servicing him. I just wonder, could they be getting more out of him? I wonder, will he even make the squad on Wednesday, the Irish squad? Quite possibly not. And it just seemed a little bit profligate, a bit wasteful. I'd like to see more of him in the game because he's such a weapon. He's an extraordinary try scorer. He's a line breaker. He's got a wicked kicking game, long and short. And there's just more they could be getting from him, for an example. But yeah, then you see them go to the Scarlets, who are abysmal on the day, and you see like a very young side score some cracking tries. You think of Ben Healy hitting the line and throwing out that long skip pass for Calvin Nash in the corner, and you think, there's been so many good glimpses of the Larkham example. Like, even that race grassing draw was a thriller. You think of that comeback win in Claremont, that strike move off a line out that ended up with a try. It was just brilliantly conceived. And there's no doubt, as Matt says, the skills are improving, particularly the forwards linking with backs. That's been a big emphasis from Larkham, by all accounts, in training. And you like that. You see Dave Kilcoyne make a bust like that. And normally he would just, you know, tuck the arm under the... Yeah. Ball under the arm, just keep on going, because that's what is in his DNA. And he throws a little pop offload to John Ryan running the support line. I don't think you'd have seen that a couple of years ago.
No, you wouldn't, for sure. So, because Matt, my reservations, and I don't underestimate their potency, ball in hand, and their ability to bludgeon lots of teams, but just that back line, like, I agree with Jerry when he says all the really eye-catching launch plays were from Connacht, you know, right from the off, that one off the line out. And you don't really see that so much from Munster. And I also share Jerry's confusion at the lack of Simon Zeebo's input into the game. And I mean, the configuration of that back line is interesting. So with the likes of Farrell to come back in and D'Alande, we've seen Keith Earls twice now at centre. Is this going to, you know, is Earls ultimately going to go back out into the wing and Zeebo goes to full back? Or how's all this going to work, and how are they going to get the most from this back line? Because there does seem to be enough talent there now to really play a bit more rugby.
I think that you've certainly got to say that the two starting centres, favoured starting centres, D'Alande and Farrell, are not there. So I think this is certainly Keith being put in a 13 is a short term measure. Obviously Rory Scannell plays there, but I don't think he's going to make the starting team if everyone's fit.
Yeah,
I can't give you an answer on Zeebo because I'm let me give Mike Haley a rap. I think he has really improved his skills this year, but I would love to see Zeebo at fullback. Now, that might be the case that Simon
is not at the level of fitness required to wear the 15 jersey. I don't know. But there's no doubt that Irish players, when they're in Ireland, are much fitter than Irish players when they go to France. And your fullback does more metres in a game than anyone except your nine. So they're usually your two highest fast-paced running metres are your 15 and your nine. And they might be building Simon back into the type of condition where he can cope with that, those numbers as a 15. Personally, I'd love to see him there. And I'd have him in the Irish squad and I'd have him in the bench for the November International because he covers so many positions and he's got an X-factor late in the game. He can bring him on and do it. But I do believe he's being wasted on the left wing. So I don't have an answer for you there, but I do think one of the other ones is what Jerry was sort of slightly touching on, is Joey Carberry getting his confidence back and really being able to launch that team going forward. Because like if you just look at that, what the charge down from Carberry, he should have passed that out to Zubo and Zubo should have banged it. That was what I thought was going to happen. He wasn't in the position to kick it. That's a lack of confidence, in my opinion, and he should have just hit Simon. Simon's get the big left foot going, bang, down that sideline, it would have been perfect. Instead, he rushed it, got charged down, almost cost them the game. So I'm not suggesting in any way that what I've seen from Munster, they're the finished article, they're really going to be banging on the door, lifting trophies. But I'm definitely not. But I have seen improvements, and I hope they keep improving, and I hope they get some self-belief, because there's much better performances in that side than we're seeing, inconsistent performances than we're seeing at the moment.
Fellas, would be remiss of us not to, on this slot, note the genuinely extraordinary interviews he's given several. Keith Earls has given, and now around the release of his new autobiography. Matt, you may not have seen all of this, obviously, over in France, but he was on the Late Show. He's here in Life magazine and the Sunday Independent. And if anyone's missed this, I suppose it's twofold, really. What he went through with his body is genuinely extraordinary, and at the time, he was playing some phenomenal rugby for Ireland. So there was a period where effectively he couldn't breathe. And this was during the Grand Slam winning year and beyond. And you think of his catch in Paris. And it turned out, after trying all sorts and really just being confused and on the cusp of giving up, that his liver had been dislodged, and that was putting the pressure on his breathing. So eventually what solved it, they were over in London and found a consultant, and they just strapped his torso very, very tightly to hold the liver in place. And he ran out into the pitch, and for the first time in a long time, he was able to breathe, which, you know, you would think is a prerequisite for rugby. So he was through the horrors with that particular injury, but it seemed like all sorts of injuries, excruciating back pain. He said of the back pain and more, "It ruined my life. I dreaded training. I came to hate rugby. I wanted to walk away from it to make the pain stop. It was back, it was neck, it was groin, it was hernia, a bit of everything, huge problems breathing." He says, "I would put the physios under an awful lot of pressure. Stuff like getting acupuncture at half time of a game when I'm breathing out through my arse. There'd be needles in my neck trying to free up whatever pain was there." And he did ultimately go to Johan van Graan and say he was done before they managed to find a solution. And then I suppose even more commendable, his openness on his mental health situation, and really was battling some very serious issues. So on the Late Late Show, he talked about Hank, persona he borrowed from that Jim Carrey film, Me, Myself and Irene. And he says, "It's what they used to say to me at home. Is it Hank today or is it Keith?" he said with a smile, although he emphasises his family always very, very supportive of him. So Hank, to Earls's mind, it says here in Life magazine, is part of him that's prone to bouts of severe depression. And he talks about in 2013, he said on the Late Late Show, "Thankfully, I've never had suicidal thoughts, but Hank is always there and he's always negative, and he's a fella I've lived with for most of my life. There are games I probably shouldn't have played in. I was in such a dark place mentally, but I found a way to get onto the pitch and take Hank down. Rang the doctor." This is in 2013. So you think, I mean, he's been in a Lions tour at this stage. "I explained everything to him. He was brilliant. I went down to see a guy in Cork, a psychiatrist, and he diagnosed me with bipolar 2. He says, "There's bipolar 1 and there's bipolar 2. Bipolar 2, probably the better one of the two to get. I was delighted to get the diagnosis. I was genuinely losing my mind." And then one last quote, and this is back in Life magazine. "It got to the point I was complaining so much to Adele that she got annoyed, unbelievably annoyed, because I was just draining her. I wouldn't have been one bit surprised if she'd left me. Being the person she was, she helped me get through it." He says now that "I'm still taking tablets to help balance out the chemicals in my brain. I've no doubt when I retire, I'll be able to come off them and I'll be able to manage better, because I've dug deep. I've found myself as well. I know when Keith is in my head and I know when Hank is in my head and I know how to get out of depression quicker. And then a final thought, and it's this is a very sad quote, I thought, in some ways, but again, he's so honest here. He said of the book and coming forward about all this, I'm embarrassed to speak about it. I know I shouldn't be embarrassed, but I am. And my embarrassment is smaller than how it might help other people. So that, Jerry, I know I've rabbited on a bit there, but that's just some of what Keith Earls has been talking about this weekend, as well as playing a high-level professional match and hopefully adding very soon to his 93 Ireland caps. That is nothing short of extraordinary from a current sports person.
Yeah, it's astonishing. It's extraordinary. It's very sad, and it's also very... It's a story of triumph over adversity as well, isn't it? It's got so much going on with it. It's an extraordinary story. It shows the battles he's had to go through. And, you know, we judge players, don't we, in all sports, and we don't know if they're carrying a physical injury, if they're, what mental condition they're in, if there's any kind of ailment. And then, you know, I don't know if I did, but some of us probably criticised Keith Earls' performances during when all this was going on. It just seems ridiculous now when you think about that. He's always been a really remarkably endearingly honest, lovely lad. I remember interviewing when he was only about 18 or 19 and I came away just blown away by how candid he was. He's had a great career that probably hasn't quite had the acknowledgement it deserves when you think that he's Ireland's joint second highest try scorer of all time after some bloke who works in your station occasionally. And I hope he does get more caps, and I hope he becomes the second highest test try scorer of all time for Ireland. It'd be a nice fitting achievement for a great career. But yeah, I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the book, the whole of the book. I'd say it would be a good read. Yeah, go on.
I was just going to say, I remember the Lions tour of 2009 when he had a bad start and dropped a couple of balls.
Yeah.
And I think it was commented upon at the time that mentally you could see that it got to him. And again, that was maybe just a glimpse of a certain fragility that may or may not have been there at the time, and confidence was an issue. But I would say, Matt, even, you know, and we're all judging here from a distance, but he was diagnosed there in 2013, and he did say in the Late Late Show he's got a hold of things now in a great way. I would say the last, I don't know what, 5, 6, 7 years in particular, Matt, Keith Earls' performances have been exceptional, even with the injuries. And I think he actually is a beloved figure in Irish rugby.
I'd agree with that. I thought Keith's been playing some wonderful rugby the last few seasons. I think, Joe, someone in my life had mental health problems, had bipolar. It was a long time ago. One, no one spoke about it. Two, no one even knew what it was. And people's lives got ruined and suffered. And it's just so brilliant that someone like Keith has the courage to come out and speak about these issues, because it's just so important that sports people who are under a lot of pressure use their platform to tell the truth about these things, that it's not a problem. Go and get help and ask for help. And that's the big issue with this problem, especially amongst young men. They don't ask. They don't put their hand up. They don't come and say, I'm feeling this way like Keith did. They deal with it. And the reality is that they don't deal with it until something mounts up and they either, you know, that there's substance, people start self medicating, you know, alcohol or drugs or whatever, and they get themselves into deeper problems. And to hear Keith come out and speak about it, I watched the interview on the Late Late Show online, and it's exactly what Jerry said. I was so uplifted and so uncomfortable at the same time. But I got to say, I sat there and said, mate, you're one ballsy man. No wonder you're a champion rugby player, because what you've just done takes so much courage. And I really hope if there's people out there that are listening that have these problems, people who are close to me had them and did nothing about it for far too long and really affected their lives, go and do something about it. It's not a problem. It's a problem that can be... It is a problem, sorry. It can be solved if you start and do what Keith said. I've got something wrong, I've got to fix. And, I was very moved by what he said, you know. And Joe, well, I'm carrying on a bit now. Like, we had Niall Breslin. I coached Niall Breslin at Leinster, and Niall and I have had these long conversations about it. And Niall was suffering from mental health issues. He had depression and so on. And we did nothing about it, because we knew nothing about it as coaches. And Niall and I've done a podcast with him. I've spoken to him privately. I've apologised to him, because I didn't know what to do about it as a coach. I didn't know what he had. And none of us did anything about it. We just thought, guys, you know, there was something wrong. They were lazy or whatever. They couldn't cope. And now that, thank heavens, when we can identify this, we know so much more about it. We can help people in sports clubs. But these guys that are leaders in our community, like Noel Breslin, has been so strong and so forthright in what he's done. And now Keith coming out and speaking about it. They are doing so much good for young people and for everyone, but especially for young people and young men, where we're showing weakness, you know, or showing vulnerability is regarded as weak, and it's not. It's just being a human being. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, he's received an extraordinary reaction, Keith. I genuinely think he was immensely popular anyway, and I think this has only brought, you know, more love and attention to him. So. That's Munster. Clock is coming against us. Just to briefly round up some of the other action, Leinster 50, Scarlets 15. I mean, we're talking about Munster being forward-oriented, Gerry. I mean, this was a fairly forward-dominated game on Leinster's part, which, you know, so often they do just smash people up front, and that's how they win games, to be honest. Johnny Sexton, hip injury of sorts with November coming into view. And one other point to throw at you, and you can pick on any of these that I'm just kind of listing off to save time. They'll play their match next weekend. Leinster's next match under the new format will be the 27th of November against Ulster. And I think Leo Cullen was talking, might have been in your piece, about, you know, players going off and playing AIL or Leinster A matches to try and keep fitness up. Because, of course, matches won't happen now during November. So that's, broadly speaking, where Leinster are at the moment.
Yeah, I wrote about this even before ball was kicked, looking ahead of the season. This was going to be a problematic and tricky campaign for Leinster and all the other provinces, particularly Leinster, though, and Munster and Ulster, because in actual fact, not having matches during the November window is a disadvantage for their squads because they've got such great strength and depth. And this, if you like, takes away a little bit of that strength from them because they can't keep their players ticking over during November. Look at Munster. As soon as the November series are over, they've got two matches against South African opposition in South Africa, come home, and then have a week to turn around and play the back-to-back games in Europe. So it's very problematic for the provinces. It's quite a balancing act when you look at Leinster's strength and depth, how they keep them busy. It's also a disadvantage for the Irish team going into the November test, Joe, because so many frontline Irish players are undercooked. A, because the Lions tour ended a month later, and B, because there's no Heineken Cup matches going into November. There always has been in the past, prior to the pandemic and the restructuring of the season last year. So it's all conspiring a little bit against the Irish team. You think of Conor Murray, he might play his first game of the season next weekend. After the Lions tour 4 years ago, before the November series, he played five games for Munster, including derbies against Leinster and Connacht, either side of games against Castro and Racing in Europe. So it's a problem for Leinster. That was pretty much close to a full-strength team, really, I think. And although you say you're right in saying that it was a lot of it was down to the set piece and the power game of their maul and their scrum and their close range drives and getting them over the line, there was some very good rugby to get them into those positions. They've developed a good capacity to strike from their own 22 with Johnny Sexton doing the wrap and bringing runners in. I could think of that Jack Conan break. There was a slight knock on that was a lovely off the cuff heads up piece of rugby by Jemison Gibson Park, Ronan Keller's power, then on to Caelan Dorris for the try. But yes, you're right. Like, I mean, Andrew Porter, how do you stop Andrew Porter from 1 or 2 metres out? I was looking at the stats in this, Joe. The five Irish front row players, Tadhg Furlong, Cian Healy, Ronan Keller, Andrew Porter and Dan Sheehan, between them, they've scored 68 tries for Leinster. Mm. It's quite ridiculous. Mm. Now, I know you look at Dan Sheehan, particularly, who I think might make the Irish squad this week, and Porter and Ronan Keller, their strike rates are ridiculous. Now, a lot of that with Keller and Sheen is a compliment to the Leinster maul, but they're just so, so clinical and ruthless. The Scarlets actually played much better than they did a week before against Munster. There was an emotional and physical reaction. They were bristling aggression from the start. They scored two fabulous tries. They weren't behind until the 30th minute. And ultimately, they were blown away by the sheer power of the Leinster pack and the accuracy of the Leinster game. If you even think of that Andrew Porter close-range finish, it's as much down to Gary Ringrose going out and doing such an effective clear out from Jemison Gibson Park snipe. It's just their breakdown work is on a different level from the other Irish provinces as well, I think. And it just shows that, yeah, the other thing as well, they're definitely trying to offload a lot more this season, I think. They're trying to play the ball out of the tackle. They're trying to develop their game further, develop other strike weapons. There were 20 offloads at the weekend. They've been close on 60 in their first four matches. And that's not counting ones that didn't go to hand. They're just the ones, and you know, there's been a few turnovers undoubtedly, but now's a good time of the season to be doing this.
Yeah, okay. That's the voice of Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times. Matt Williams with us as well. Rugby and Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us, everyone in. Just a very final point, Matt. Ulster beat the Lions 26 points to 10. That's a fourth straight bonus point win for Ulster. I think a lot of people are looking forward to this Connacht game at the Aviva because Ulster haven't had to be exceptional thus far. It's been a gentle-ish start in the campaign, but the point to note is that, I suppose, parallels with Orgie Snyman after Munster's great win the other week, nobody in Belfast felt very good about this bonus point win because Will Addison, it seems now it's been confirmed, lower leg fracture. So in his 4 years, Matt, he's managed 26 appearances. And it's such a pity because I would say in a lot of those 26 appearances and at times for Ireland, he's looked a real player. Like there's a hell of a player there in Addison and we're just not seeing it. And look, I don't know how long a leg fracture takes to heal, but it's probably another season which is largely getting away from him.
Very sad news, isn't it? You just some players just seem to attract it. And, you know, as you say, that's an appalling statistic for Will that he's played such few games. Putting that aside, the other on a plus, it's Sam Carter as captain. He missed most of last year with it. And, Sam coming back and playing very good former Wallaby and Brumby and really doing a good job getting that team to be highly effective. They're not flashy and they're not brilliant, but gee, they're effective, you know. And none more than Nick Timoney there in the back row. He played 6, 7, and 8. He played 7 on a weekend, scored 2 tries, player of the match. And young Nathan Doak, again, you know, kicking the ball very well off the tee, putting in some really good performances. I'll be interested to see if he sneaks in as someone they might bring into the national squad just to give him a bit of experience around the fringes. I'm not suggesting he should start or play or anything like that, but he might be someone that would come through because he's certainly got the physique and the pedigree to do it. Lovely tall lad, 6'1", I believe he is, and a really good position there. But what Ulster are doing well, Joe, is they're just getting results. They're not doing anything flashy. You can't say, look, I fancy this team to win a competition. But they're at the top of the table and they've got the bonus points and they just keep doing it. And their next two games are going to be very interesting. They've got Connacht away and Leinster away. And that we'll probably know a little bit more about where this team really is after those two.
Yeah, Connacht game at the Aviva should be real occasion. So, I mean, I suspect they'll have an angry Connacht coming their way. So we'll look forward to that. Fellas, super stuff tonight. Matt Williams, thank you. Gerry Thornley of the Irish Times, thank you. We'll leave it there. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Joe. Cheers, Matt.
Thanks, Joe.
See you, Monday Bye Night now. Rugby on Off the Ball. With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us, everyone in.
As a major research institution, Arizona State University offers the most online bachelor's degree programs, along with world-class faculty and dedicated support. Discover why ASU is ranked number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Tap to learn more.